It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Look at it. We're back from the crud. We're in the 12 days of Christmas. It's an important time for gardening. I want to say it always impresses me, this thing about light this time of year. And I hope you're sensitive to light. I hope you're aware of light. Because if you garden, it's the key. It ain't the fertilizer. It ain't even how you water. What's key is the light. And without the light, none of the rest of it matters. Fertilizer doesn't matter. Water doesn't matter. You know, all the fertilizer in the world isn't going to change the fact that you don't have enough light. It's always good to think about. But the one thing that's happening right now is that, and this is the bizarre part, we don't think about it enough. The day length is changing. The amount of light that you get is increasing. The amount of night is decreasing. And it's happening pretty fast. It happens pretty fast this time of year. It's really, I always think of it as kind of a gradual process. But you know I was wrong. And the more I look at it, the more I think it really isn't gradual at all. And in fact, my plants are already responding. We didn't have enough sunlight. We didn't have enough sunlight, starting around December 10 in Mobile, and even earlier, really even around November 25th up in Huntsville. We didn't have enough sunlight to really move plants to get them growing. And so they sat there, they did okay, they survived the cold, but they didn't do anything. You know, you pick your parsley and boom, you picked it. And there's ways of thinking about that, and there are ways of handling that, and it doesn't grow back. Did you notice that? You pick your collards, and they don't grow back. The cold doesn't bother them. They're okay. They're doing fine, except they don't grow back, except now. And it's almost like it shouldn't happen this quick, you think. It should not be this fast. And yet it is. This new year is accelerating rapidly. Rapidly now because of the sunlight. And the plants are responding. So suddenly my parsley is, you know, I'm going to have more parsley than I know what to do with. Which is great because I can make lots of pesto. I'm going to have, you know, the collards just sat there, just absolutely, they're producing new leaves. The chard is coming back so incredibly strong, incredibly strong. The chard got a little damaged by one of the cold spells, and I thought, gosh, you know, it's going to recover. Well, it didn't, because it didn't have enough sunlight to recover. And now, boom, it's growing like crazy. It's growing like crazy. And it makes sense. One of the things that happens, if I can tease your brain to think about this day length thing, it's really important, is that daylight is increasing at a faster rate now than it will later on in spring. And so it's interesting. It's not only like your days get longer by a certain length of time every day that accumulates, it's that they get longer faster than they would later in the year. And so this is really beginning to accelerate, and so you really got to pay attention because everything's ready to grow. It's ready to grow. If you're in Mobile, there's no need to delay. This is why I stress these. If you can remember the 12 days of Christmas, you remember when they are? It ends on January 6th, which is what, Epiphany or whatever, and it it starts back on December 25th. And in that period of time, there is it's so important to remember that you need to start planning. If you're on the Gulf Coast, this is the time to plant peas. Yeah, it's time. It's not. You don't plant your peas, my friends, on the Gulf Coast, or really much anywhere south of Montgomery. You don't plant them in April when people in New York do. Oh, I know you think you live in New York, but you don't. You live in Alabama. You live on the Gulf Coast. And so you got to plant like the seasons are different here, and they are. And you know the other thing that's interesting is that day length is recovering in New York, just like it is here, but it's not recovering. They're way behind. They still don't have 10-hour days. We're going to have 10-hour days. They're not even close. We're going to have 10-hour days very soon, and when those 10-hour days hit, boom, everything clicks. Well, we already have 10-hour days in Mobile. And so it's really important to think this is the time to plant. Get your peas ready to go. Sugar snap peas, plant them now. If the ground is, it's not going to be that wet and cold. It's going to be a little wet, but not too. It's going to be a little cold, but not too. They're going to germinate like crazy. If you want to pre-germinate them, you can do that, which is a good idea. You can take them, get them a little water, soak them a few hours. Just enough to get them start turning green, opening up, turning green. Drain that water out. Don't do it overnight. Drain that water out, and then plant them. And they're going to germinate pretty fast. Not going to rot. They're going to do just fine. It's time, if you're living, even if you're in Huntsville, it's time you got to do things like plant your greens. If you want, sometimes the greens don't always manage to get through the winter very well because they're all going to start flowering because they've been through so many cold spells. So it's a good time to plant more greens, a good time to plant more broccoli, and it's time now to sow them, get them ready to go. So it's the season. It's the time. You're ready to start planting. It's probably not too late to even plant lawns. It's a great time to plant lawns now. And I don't encourage you to plant a lawn if you don't have to, because it's a pain in the patootie no matter what you do. But if you're going to do it, you want to get it done now. You want to get it done before the end of February. Really, that's the best time on the Gulf Coast, and even probably as far north as Huntsville. Even with warm season grasses, I would certainly consider planting them now. Shrubs and trees, it's all time. It's time. You've got your last little window here. The days are getting longer. The nights are getting shorter. That means things. Your garden's going to be responding. Your grass is going to start growing. You're going to have to mow things. You're going to have spring weeds, which you should delight in, not worry about them. They're actually pretty cool, and they're easy to deal with in the lawn. You can call me and ask me. What you do is you mow them. Really easy. Or you eat them. A lot of them are quite edible. They're coming up. We can talk about that, too. But give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. I hope you have survived the cold. I hope you have survived the flus that have come through. We all do, more or less. But give us a call this morning. We'd be glad to talk about it. Glad to talk about these longer days and what that means and what you need to be doing in your yard. And we could talk about things like, oh, you know what else is happening? The birds are telling us the days are longer. You know what I heard yesterday? It was the most amazing sound in the whole world. You asked me what it's like. Little woodcocks. Woodcocks. A whole bunch of woodcocks Let's talk about them.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, you know I'm going to talk about those woodcocks. Do you know what woodcocks are? Have you seen woodcocks before? There's a whole bunch of birds that we don't talk about that people used to know and think about a lot. Woodcock were once up there with quail as a game bird. I don't think many people hunt them anymore. People don't have patience for hunting birds like that anymore. And even quail, I think, it requires a degree of something. But woodcock are really interesting birds, not just because people like to shoot them or did it one time. And they're, to me, here's what's so cool about woodcocks. Woodcocks respond to this increasing day length about as well as anybody. I don't really think I've ever seen them start. I'll be interested if those of you in Florida have maybe seen differently, but I don't think I've ever seen them start with their famous mating displays and sounds as early as December. In early December, it always seems to be right as the day length begins to increase. I think they're as sensitive to it as plants are. And they're starting on the Gulf Coast. I mean, they're probably well into it along the Gulf Coast now, this being the 12th day of Christmas. And there's this incredible thing. You'll think it's a frog. You'll think it's a frog. It's kind of this weird, about 4:30, 4:45, 5 o'clock, the sky's starting to get a little red. The sun's not too far from the edge of the horizon, dropping down pretty fast, and you'll start hearing it, and you'll think it's frogs. You got enough light left to garden. I'm out there. I got a little light left to garden. And then over from the backwaters, over there from a kind of a swampy, woody place, an oxbow maybe, you hear this sound, you think it's frogs, except you think, what kind of frog is that? And you know, you think, well, it's the chorus frogs, it's the spring peepers. Well, they're coming on, but they're not here yet. It's another sound. It's beep, 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 beep. Sorry, had to do it. And you hear it all around you. And you hear multiple, and it's just really insistent. And then suddenly you hear this sound. You think it's like a bird whistle, except it goes on and on and on. And it seems to ascend, and it gets faster and faster, 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 faster. And it's this strange whistling sound that gets faster, 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 faster. And then there's suddenly all sorts of other whistles wrapped up in it, and it is the most otherworldly sound you can imagine. It's the woodcocks. It's the male woodcocks going up in their displays out in the middle of the fields, which they like those open areas. They like savannas. They like those grassy areas, too, and we got them. And they're soaring up, just straight up in the air. It's the most improbable flight you've ever seen from a bird that looks like it could barely fly. It's got a bill that's like, you know, bill that's almost as long as your hand. The bill is almost as long as the bird's body is. It has no tail at all. And yet when it flies, it's the most amazing thing. It's a rocket. And the sound of that whistling rocket going up into the air is just amazing. This is the males. They're doing the display. It's a cool thing to listen for. It's our bird signs. It's signs of things happening. And we could live our life by these bird signs, by these bird times. We don't. You know, we try to find them. You think that robins come in spring. Sorry. Look around you. Robins are here in winter. That's when they invade. When it gets really cold and chilly, that's when they invade us. Here in the South, we have other ways of looking at bird signs. Robins are a sign of winter. The first sign that winter is about to disappear are the woodcocks. They're cool. They're super cool right now. Time to start thinking about things. Time to start working on it. Is it too late to direct sow sweet peas now? No. I don't think so. I think it's somewhat better. They don't like heat at all. And I do think it might help if you pre-germinate those sweet peas a little bit just to get them going. You could even sow them carefully in containers and then plant them out about as soon as they come up, just to get them that over that little extra hump. Get them good size. I think they're going to do just fine. What is the best time to plant sweet peas? In general, I think the best time to plant sweet peas is October on the Gulf Coast. Farther north, it gets trickier. Maybe around Birmingham, it's particularly tricky. In Huntsville, it's even trickier. And I would plant those sweet peas. I think I might plant them now. They might need a little bit of cover. But sow them in pots first, perhaps. But they hate the heat. That's the problem. But they bloom beautifully during the cool days. So, yeah, give it a shot. And maybe think, if you're on the Gulf Coast next year, commit to planting them a little earlier. October or November are fine times to get them out. Soil is still warm enough to get those seeds up and germinating. You get a little bit of foliage on them. They get used to the cold. They adapt to the cold a little better. And so they'll take a lot of cold temperatures. Not our coldest winters. They may have some struggle, but most winters you're going to be fine planting them in fall. And then they'll bloom in spring. That's the sweet pea thing. That's the sweet peas. I'm thinking about all the other stuff I need to be planting this year. I have not done well with corn. And I have not done well with corn recently. There are a couple of reasons. On the Gulf Coast, corn can be difficult because, particularly if you're growing some of the big tall varieties, like even Silver Queen, which is the classic, and people try to grow it in their yards, and you know what happens? It gets blown over. And it can be hard to manage. And you got a lot of corn stalk in a small space. It's hard to manage in your yard. So I haven't done as well with corn as I could have. And so I've been thinking about some of the newer varieties of corn and some of the older varieties. I don't like those sugar enhanced varieties of corn for a lot of reasons. And some of them can struggle in our climate. But there's some older varieties. I'm beginning to play with the corn again. You know, what would you look for in a good corn variety? Well, I'm not going to grow it if it doesn't taste really good. And that doesn't mean that it tastes like sugar. It means that it tastes like corn. Because I might want to make great cream corn out of it. And, you know, those super sugar-enhanced corns, they don't make good cream corn. Why don't they make good cream corn? Because they don't have any milk. They don't have any milk. They don't have the things that made good cream corn. And even if you're eating it fresh off the cob, they don't have that great flavor, that great taste. So I want to think about a corn, not one of these super hyped, overhyped, oh, this is super sweet corn. If that's what you want, go buy some candy. If you want corn taste with a good bit of sugar in it, there are ways of doing that, the old-fashioned ways. And if you really want to celebrate that old corn flavor that goes back to not ancient times, but 1,000 years here along the Gulf Coast, you want to think about what kind of varieties of corn am I going to try. We're going to talk about some of those varieties. You know, here's another thing you want with corn. You don't want it to get too tall. And this is, you want to have a good root system. You want to have a good firm root system, and you don't want it to get too tall. And so if you're growing a 7 or 8 foot tall corn in your yard, and we get the first tropical storms that come in, or even a good windy May, ooh, heavens, you're going to lose your corn. And it's hard because we're only planting in small patches. We need to talk about what those small patches look like. So let's talk a little bit about corn and what we're thinking about, because I really want to get my corn started early. Want to get ready, get the beds ready for it. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world alone. There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
All right. I get to talk about corn. I think it's a good time for you to think about corn. You got a lot of things to think about. I hope, you know, I talk a lot about sugar snaps, and it's time to get them planted. If you have any questions about that, you give me a call. What varieties? I like this Taichung 13 variety out of Taiwan. For sugar snaps. It makes a lot of sense that, in fact, a place like Taiwan, which has a climate similar to Alabama's, it's humid, it's warm, probably a little warmer in Taiwan mostly than it is here, but not too different. And so they want varieties that are going to stand up to the heat and that produce well and during short days. And so Taichung is one of those. I like that one. I like it better than Sugar Snap. It does performs consistently better, but there's some other good ones out there. We could talk about, if you're of a mood to talk about Sugar Snaps, you can always entice me. But I'm here to talk about corn. We're going to talk about spinach because Don's got a good question and we're going to answer it. But we're talking about corn right now. I said in the last segment that it is time to begin thinking about corn because I want to get it in reasonably early here. And I like getting it in early. Another thing to think about with corn, because I really don't like dealing with worms and I don't like dealing with high winds and I don't like dealing with the humidity, which can be a problem. If corn can mature in May and June, you really got something. It's very super easy. If it's maturing in July and August, which I'm not saying it's not something to try, you're going to struggle with it. You're going to have a harder time. You're going to have more problems that develop. But get that corn in that slot, that May and June slot, particularly if you're on the Gulf Coast. It's really important to do that. If you're a little farther north, you can push it a little later. It's, how many days is that? That's 80, oh, let's say it's 80 to 100 days. Maybe 75 to 100 days, depending on the variety, but basically somewhere in that slot. And that means, how many months is that? It sounds like 2.5 to 3 months, right? That you're going to need of warm weather to get that corn to grow. Not super hot weather, but warm weather. And you want to get it in before the dry days. And so if you count backwards, June, May, April, yeah, it's pretty good, right? So you want to start getting your corn planted in March, and you can even plant, it's not a bad idea to plant, as early as February along the Gulf Coast. And think about how soon February is coming up. In fact, I think it's a good idea to plant in February, and we'll talk about that on the Gulf Coast. I wouldn't try it in Huntsville, but I would certainly try it on the Gulf Coast. And there's another thing to think about with corn, which also says something about the days, and that is you're not growing it for grain processing. You're growing it for a few ears at a time. And those ears don't keep. You know, a garden isn't like a grocery store. And I think people think like it is, that so you got to plan to have just enough corn and not too much corn over an extended period of time, because you don't want to eat all your corn in 4 days, do you? So you want to plant in small blocks. And you want those small blocks, and we're going to talk about a block here in just a minute, but you want those small blocks, you want to start planting them in sequence. So about every couple of weeks, you want to plant more corn. What a great idea. In fact, it goes back to some earlier practices, and we can talk about them, for planting corn, planting in hills and planting in circles. We'll talk about that. But it's time to plant your corn, and there are several varieties of corn out there now. It's gotten more complicated. There are the old varieties of corn. They have a great corn flavor. Some of them were grain corns, some of them were dent corns, some of them were flint corns, but some of them were green corns. They were corns designed to be eaten green while they were not dried on the stalk, but to eat while they're fresh because they're sweet. And there are a lot of them out there. Some of them were hybrids. Some of them weren't. And but here's the cool thing about those. They had a great creamy corn taste and enough sugar to really make it really nice. And they were the corns that we cooked with. They were the corns that we some of you aren't old enough, but they were the corns we remember as children. And they were very good. They were silver corns. Queen is kind of one of the later versions of that. Not necessarily the best by any means, but a later version that people got used to along the Gulf Coast, and it's okay corn. But there are a lot of other varieties out there. The problem with those corns is that once you pick them, you had to bring those corns in and cook them as quickly as possible, because almost as soon as you picked them, the sugar started turning to starch. And in fact, once the silks started turning brown on many of those old varieties, they started turning to starch. So they're very sensitive. They're delicious. There's almost nothing better in my mind than those corns. And some of the old-fashioned corns, when you pick them fresh, they're absolutely delicious. The roasted ears and the other things that you hear people talking about. We developed some hybrids over the time that got a little bit sweeter and that held on to that sweetness just a little bit longer. Silver Queen was one, but there are others, and don't get stuck on Silver Queen just because some farmers growing it, and there aren't many farmers growing it anymore because there aren't many farmers left and on the Gulf Coast. Wonder what happened to all that farmland. But there you go. Those are the old varieties. Then we got this sugar in. They got these super sweet varieties that were out there, and they are very sensitive, and they're very sweet. They're almost candy sweet, and if that's what you want, that's fine, but those don't taste like old corn. They don't have the flavor of corn. They don't cook well. You can't make cream corn out of them, and I like cream corn. They don't really pair well with anything else. You just eat them off the cob, basically, and that's it. And they hold on to their sweetness for a long period of time. You can put them in the refrigerator, and you can forget about them for a few days, and that's fine, and then you can pull them out and eat them. And then there are there's a kind of a third generation, which are, I guess they're SEs, sugar-enhanced, and there's a lot of them. I think candy corn is one and some others, and they're not as sensitive. They're not as sensitive to how you grow them and where you grow them. They don't hold on to their sweetness quite as long, but they're milky, and you can actually use them and cook them just like you cooked old varieties of corn. So there's these different varieties of corn that are out there. And now there's a fourth generation that I want to talk about, and that is people going back and breeding these new varieties of corn that aren't these sort of half genetically modified corns that are finicky. They're corns that you can save the seed on. You can't save the seed on a lot of corn, like Silver Queen. You can't save it yourself and get Silver Queen. But these new varieties, you can actually save the seed on, and I'm going to be experimenting with some of them. They're really interesting. So, gosh, what were all... I got several varieties, and I'll remember all of them. I got one of the old varieties called Ashworth, which I've grown before, which is really nice. It's about a 5 to 6 foot stalk, and I said it's really important to think about the height of your stalk. It won't blow over as easy. It's got a good firm foot. It's good. It doesn't blow over easy, and it has a great corn. It's a good corn. That's really good. There's one that I'm growing called Top Hat that I'm going to try this year. That's had a lot of success. I'm really hopeful about it. And it's one that you can save the seed on. It has that good old corn flavor, but it has a little bit of enhanced sweetness too, just through normal breeding practices. It's been dehybridized, as they like to say, and you can save the seed on it. I'm going to try that one. There's another one called Kiss Me Somebody. I can't remember. Oh, gosh. But it's got Kiss in there somewhere, and it's a nice sweet corn. I'm anxious to try it. Looks, sounds good. Sounds like it ought to be really good. So we're going to be trying some of those corn varieties. So things to be thinking about. Start shopping through those corn catalogs, because there's a lot to look for. And you don't have much time before you're going to have to start thinking about that. Right? It's there it is. Some other questions. So Will in Fairhope, are you familiar with the new Celebrity Plus tomato and any advantages it may have versus the old standard Celebrity? No. I haven't grown a lot of the hybrid tomatoes. I really got burned out on hybrids. There were some hybrids that I really liked that I thought did really well on the Gulf Coast. And you know what? As soon as I find one that I like, what happened? They quit producing it. And so... Dona, D-O-N-A, Donna, however you want to pronounce it, was one of those old varieties. It's now, people have tried to dehybridize it so that you can grow it. It's not quite as good, but Dona was a good one. It was good for the Gulf Coast. So what I've looked for, because there's so many things that many growers aren't thinking about when they're producing tomatoes, they're not thinking about the factors of growing things along the Gulf Coast. I don't grow the hybrids anymore. I just don't even mess with them. You can mess with them and tell me how you do. I've looked for older varieties, older heirloom varieties that are adaptable. Not ones that are too stuck, but ones that tend to have a little bit of variability in them. Santiago is one. And I might even cross some of those older varieties just to get a little better adaptation in my garden. I don't grow the super heirlooms, and there's some other things with tomatoes that I work on, like productivity is more important than size. Flavor is more important than size, right? Yeah. So those are the things I work on. Vigorousness, ability to produce even during the hot nights. That's a big thing. Celebrity is good. Celebrity was never one of my favorite tomatoes in terms of flavor. I don't know whether Celebrity Plus is any better than the old Celebrities. The old Celebrities did okay. I just didn't particularly think their flavor was all that great. Maybe the Celebrity Plus is going to be good. So you can be thinking about your tomatoes now, too, because you're going to have to start them very, very soon.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud.
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Oh my goodness, I keep thinking about all the things I need to be, all the seeds I need to have ready to go. And I just barely even started with you guys. It's a funny thing this time of year. I think people don't pay attention to gardening as much this time of year. And, I don't know. Maybe you guys are out there and you're listening to every word I say. But let me tell you, this is the important time. And I hate to harangue, but this is the important time. This is the time when you got to start thinking about your garden. You have to start thinking about, I don't care what kind of garden you got. This is the time you've got to start thinking about it. The days are getting longer. And we'll have hot weather soon. And summer is not, summer is a very different type of gardening season. It is, we can garden in every season. But the things that do well in midsummer are not the things that come first to mind when you're thinking about gardening. Maybe they should, but they don't. Because summer on the Gulf Coast is a very special time. It's a Gulf Coast summer starting between June and August, and it gets to be very difficult. You're not going to do anything with tomatoes during that period of time. You're just not. Your bell peppers are going to poop out. There's a whole series of things. You're not going to grow sugar snaps during that time. You're not even going to get beans. You know, even the best beans kind of play off, and there's one exception, and Don wants me to talk about it. We will. But you really got to start thinking about things now. Don asked me about spinach, and let me tell you about spinach. At least what I know about spinach. You tell me if you've seen differently. And you may have. Maybe you got a secret that I don't know. Spinach does not like hot weather. Doesn't like hot weather at all. But there's another thing that spinach doesn't like, and it doesn't even germinate well in hot weather. I mean, it needs almost pretty cool soil to germinate. And there's another trick with spinach, which is that it goes to seed, it bolts readily as days lengthen. And that means that if you could get the seed started in fall, which is hard to do because the soil is so hot, and because there's a lot of things that are out there messing with seedlings, if you could get it started in fall, and you might have a few weeks in winter, and it's pretty hardy, and it might keep going through into spring, but getting it started in fall is a very difficult thing to do. And then if you start it now, what happens when day length starts increasing? So you're going to have a few weeks. You'll have a few weeks when you can harvest that spinach. But it's not an ideal crop for the South. And there's a window now. Don, there is a window now when it's possible to do spinach. And you should give it a try and tell me how it works. But it does not like the fact that our day length gets longer, pretty accelerates and gets longer pretty quickly, and it's going to want to go to seed. Particularly if it gets a little bit of cold and then warms up, it's going to want to go to seed. So try it, Don, and tell me what you think. Let me make a suggestion here, though, because there's some other things that do a lot better and that actually are probably better for you. I think, you know, there are two reasons to grow spinach, and that's because, one, you saw Popeye cartoons growing up, and I did, and I thought, God, Popeye's, you know, some of us liked Popeye. And, of course, Popeye ate canned spinach, which is kind of weird. But, you know, that's fine. That's what it was, propaganda to get you to eat your spinach. But that's all right, because Popeye's pretty cool. Or you grow spinach because you read somebody else said, oh, this is a really cool thing to grow. Well, there's the third reason, because you had it in a salad and it wasn't too bad. But let me say that from a nutritional perspective, I think Popeye would have been even stronger had he been eating chard or collards or kale or some of the mustards or some of the nasturtiums or many other things that you can grow that aren't so finicky and that will do well in the South. I think nasturtiums in particular. Whew. Boy, you talk about... Now, there's some nutrients. So, think about that. Let's talk about chard for just a second, because it will play a similar role in salad. I actually like the flavor of chard better. And you can grow the ruby types that you can get as plants and some of the others. But I actually like growing from seed things like Silverado and perpetual spinach. These are green types of chard. Perpetual spinach is not a spinach, it's a chard. And it's really good. And really delicious and really prolific and really easy to grow compared to spinach. And it will keep going. Now, eventually it'll go to seed like some others, but it keeps growing longer. And sometimes even those, they may survive the summer and come back in the fall. They're really easy to grow in fall as well. So I would say spend a little time on spinach. Spend a lot more time on chard. How is that? Is that fair? And the flavor of chard, whew, boy, in a salad, it really livens up a salad. I don't even grow lettuce anymore. I know, you'd ask me about lettuce varieties, and I'll have to think back, because I don't even grow them anymore, because there's so many good things you can put in salads, like chard, like some of the new collards, the old new collards, the collards that have been around Southern Gardens for a long time that people have forgotten about, that you didn't go to the getting place to get, that you passed along, and we're rediscovering some of those old varieties of collards, and they're absolutely delicious and wonderful in salads. Very sweet, incredibly sweet. And then the mustards and the kales, all good in salads. This is a good time to be planting those. And Don also wants me to talk about another thing which you can be thinking about that'll get you into summer. And that's asparagus bean, yard long bean. Absolutely delicious bean. They're actually, Don, did you know this? They're related to black-eyed peas. They're related to cow peas, field peas, pink-eye purple hull peas, Mississippi silver, all of those old varieties, the whippoorwill peas, all of those old varieties of field peas, summer peas that we grew, not the green peas, but the summer peas, and that's what these are related to. Will they cross? I don't know. It's one of the interesting things. I got to figure that out. I think there is a little potential for crossing between them, because they are closely related, but they make these huge yard-long beans, which can be, Don, you tell me, more productive along the Gulf Coast than even things like rattlesnake beans, which are very heat-tolerant. But I think those asparagus beans tend to survive into the deep summer a little better. A little better. Okay. We'll be back.
Walk along the river, sweet lullaby. It just keep on flowing. And don't worry about where it's going. Oh, no.
It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast, with nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. It's time for me to think about my whole gardening year, and that's what I'm doing. You should be too. You should be thinking about it too. And it's that time of year when I harangue you to get you to think about these things. Because now, of course, you even have to start thinking about planting tomatoes. When should you plant your tomatoes? Not in the garden, but you want to grow them from seed. You don't want to be stuck with whatever Lowdown Depot makes you do. So you want to grow from seeds. All right, here we go. Gene, are you there, Gene?
Gene. Hello. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you there.
Yes, I am. I'm about to sleep. I'm here.
I'm sorry. I didn't get the message. I was looking in the wrong place, and I didn't see you on the phone.
Well, you were talking about corn a while ago, and I was going to tell you something. In 1966, and the only reason I remember 1966, I was living on Holland Island, and my first son was born there. And I had a little small garden thing, and I planted some corn. It was called Golden Bantam. It was about
yes, six. Sir.
That is the finest. You can eat the cob. I don't know where you can get it anymore or not, but anyway, you know what I'm talking about?
It's a great corn, and you can still get it. It's one of the older green corns that people used to eat fresh, and it is a great little corn. It's open pollinated, so you can save the seeds on it. I think there's several places. I think Territorial Seed still grows it. Still sells it, but there are several places you can get Golden Bantam. It's a great little corn, and it's not too tall, right?
You can have a little short, fat woman. She picked that.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I didn't say that about nobody's wife. Now,
yeah, I know. Let's don't go there, Gene. But you don't got to be tall to pick it. That's what we like to say. And it's a really nice corn, so it doesn't blow over. And I've grown Golden Bantam and been very happy with it. The cobs are a little short, right? They're
right.
Not long cobs.
Not about
but
6 inches.
But they're absolutely delicious, and they're great for eating fresh, and they're great for making cream corn too.
I never tried that, but anyway, hey Jordan, that's been a long time ago. And I hadn't even thought about Golden Bantam because there used to be a nursery down there by McGill Institute, and they stole the seeds and they could get them down. And then, of course, they've been out of business for 50 years. But anyway, I thought you might appreciate that. I'm glad to know that you've heard of them. So good.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I hear a lot about that nursery down by McGill. But you're thinking about the bluebird, right?
No. Originally they were down there by Central Fire Station, and then they moved out there by McGill. And then after a while, McGill needs some parking places, so they moved them on out and moved them out. And they went on out there on close to I can't remember the name. That's Crichton anyway. And they just
I know who you're talking about. Yes, I'm sorry, I'm not thinking about it.
It was
old right
family
now,
name. Been in that business
right,
for years.
Right. Shoot. And I should not forget that name.
I shouldn't either.
Gene, what is wrong with us?
When I was young and you could buy a little small cup and have a little plant in there. You could buy one plant. Now you go to Lowdown Depot or whatever it is, and you got to get six or something. I don't want six. I don't want two or three, you know.
Yeah, right.
See? Anyway, I thought you'd appreciate that Golden Bantam. So,
Golden Bantam's a great corn, Gene. It's a great corn. It's one of the old ones. Yeah,
I might get up off my backside in the spring and plant some.
Yeah. Good.
All right,
good.
Buddy.
All right, Gene.
Let's
thank you.
Something real quick. Here. I was listening to the radio during the holidays, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I got Bill Finch, the same program every day.
I'm sorry.
I was over field with Bill Finch. I got that one down. I caught all three of them. But anyway, I enjoy your program. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, Gene. Bye. So, we repeat shows sometimes, but if you miss stuff, you can pick it up. David's showing me pictures of David Hubble of smoked boudin, stuffed melaton that I made for my coworkers. It's beautiful stuff. Actually really nice. David Hubble is saying, look, he's falling behind on getting my seed started within the 12 days of Christmas, which is, this little important goal we set for ourselves. But at least he's looking, and he's going to have those seeds ready. It really is important, folks. We try to stress this, to get those seeds started. I think you should get your tomatoes started by about the 15th of January. That's a good time. It doesn't hurt to start them this early, too. Certainly bell peppers and other things, I'd go ahead and get them started about the 15th of January if you're on the Gulf Coast. If you're farther north, you can dally a bit longer because you're not going to see those super hot days come in as quickly, and because you can't plant out as early. Super hot nights is the big deal. But yeah, you gotta start thinking about these kinds of things. Even with the peppers that I love that will keep producing through the middle of summer, if you're gonna start them now, things like the Chinese peppers, the habanero style peppers, even the mild ones, which are quite good, that don't have barely any heat, or the ajis from South America, which are in the Bacatum group, those are incredibly productive. I mean, unbelievable. You will never, ever get so many peppers as you do from these guys. And they are absolutely delicious. And it almost makes you think, God, why was I growing anything else? Why would I even bother with bell peppers? But there's some great ones out there. But it takes them a while to get cranked up. So you want to start those early, too. I like starting those in fall while the soil is still warm and taking them over the winter. And it's not hard to do. It's pretty easy to do that. So, any rate, it's time to get started. We're going to talk a lot about the different things because that's what I feel like thinking about. I'm sorry. And if I feel like thinking about it, it's because it's time. It's time to do it in the garden. It means it's time for you too. It's time. We got the woodcocks out there telling us that it's time. They're out there making that weird sound. What a weird, beautiful sound when they're mating. Snipe, Gene, Don, snipe do it too. And snipe are a real thing. Some of you will remember going snipe hunting. Don does with your brother. And it's a weird thing, this snipe hunting ritual that isn't a real thing. But there is this real thing called snipe hunting, and I've done it. And I've done it in the middle of the Mobile Tensaw Delta when the mud comes up to your hips. And you have to figure out how you're going to get out of that mud, which is not an easy thing to do. My old friend Mike Marshall was so insistent on it, and we did it. And did we ever kill a bird, Mike? I don't think we ever did. But it was, which is part of the challenge of snipe hunting. But the snipe were there. We saw them. But they don't have that. They don't breed here. It's the woodcocks that are doing the breeding here.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
Yeah, Gene, Ibsen's Garden Seeds. I-B-S-E-N. Jeff kind of got me halfway there. Ibsen's Garden Seeds on Old Shell. Started over on Old Shell. I think maybe there was an earlier iteration of Ibsen's too. It was a multi-generational thing. And I think the Robinsons, I think ended up taking it over. But the daughter of the, any rate, Ibsen's Seed was the place, Gene, that used to sell seed. We've lost a lot of these. We've lost a lot of those old family-owned seed and nursery places. And it makes things more difficult. But we've got a few left, and some of them advertise on our show, and I encourage you to take advantage of them. I wish that we had a better way to distribute seeds, but many of these folks have seeds that aren't available at Lowdown Depot. And I think they're generally more thoughtful about the kinds of seeds they carry, and a lot of times you can get them in bulk, which you can't do at Lowdown Depot. So the other place to order seeds, of course, is on the Internet, and why would we be talking about this right now? It's because it's time to plant. I think there's a downside to this internet thing, and that is that we tend to plug into places that don't even know where Mobile is. They're, in their own way, they're as bad as, you know, Lowdown Depot. And so what do we do about that? I wish that we were so much more sophisticated. We're certainly going to have to use our local garden centers and our botanical gardens as sources of plants that are locally grown, or we're not going to have the kinds of things that we really want for our gardens, but it would be nice if they were part of a seed exchange too, and that they had seeds that were known to be well adapted here, and maybe even seeds that really were only available in, say, Mobile. Wouldn't that be weird? And cool and nice and great for gardening. At any rate, we'll do that. I'm thinking about things to plant now, because there's a whole series of them. Jim in Georgetown says habanada is the pepper that tastes like habaneros. Jim, so yes, it is one, and there are some other great ones out there, and Southern Exposure has a couple that they're exceptional, and I was really impressed with both of them in terms of their production. Arigato something or another. I mean, they both have Spanish names, which is kind of appropriate because they're Caribbean peppers, and the Spanish names may actually be translations of native words in some cases, that were pre-Spanish. But they're pretty cool peppers. And there's a bunch of these. In fact, the low-heat habaneros have been around not just for a little while. They've been around for decades and centuries. And they're part of the culture in many places. And they're really great to have. And there's a bunch of them. And I won't even give all the names. Southern Exposure's got a couple of really good ones that I tried. It's a great place to start. And I don't remember the names. One's Arigato something or another, and the other one is something. I don't remember. I'll look them up here in just a minute. But they're really good. Oh, here's one. No, that's not it. Anyway, we'll find those, and I'll tell you about those varieties, but they're really good. There it is. Pimiento Lago Agrio, which really delicious. And the other one was Arigato something. So the one that starts with pimiento, like pimento, is at Southern Exposure. Both of those were really excellent, excellent. And Baker's Seeds probably has some good ones as well. I love peppers too. It's really, you know, it's people get really obsessed about tomatoes, and that's good, and I would find a good tomato and stick with it. But I'll tell you, peppers, you just can't. You can't, the range of taste and flavors in peppers is just, it's just, there's nothing else like it in the garden. It's just unbelievable. You can spend the rest of your life growing different kinds of peppers and never grow the same thing twice. It's just amazing. There it is. Yeah, Baker's Creek seeds, really good place. So questions about nasturtiums. Growing nasturtiums, because I highly recommend that you try them. This is the time of year that I would start them. You can also start them in fall, and that's a nice thing. Grow them in pots and then put them out in summer. I often did that. But it's not too late to start them now. It takes a long time for those jokers to germinate. Some seeds germinate really well. I will say that any seeds that I keep, any nasturtium seeds that I keep for very long in this humid climate, don't germinate well. I think there's a correlation between the humidity and keeping them, and I think there may be some problems there. But they don't seem to keep well. So I would always get fresh nasturtium seeds. And you can save nasturtium seeds as well, which is also a good idea. And I don't do enough of that because I like playing around with a bunch of different kinds of nasturtiums. But I'm going to start saving nasturtium seeds. You can get some really cool things. And if they're all kind of weird speckledy colors, it's all the better. You really want those flowers are delicious. The flowers are absolutely delicious no matter what color they are. And the leaves are great, and they're great. They're just wonderful things to have around. They're beautiful. Nasturtiums, fragrant. Oh, so cool. How do you get them to germinate? Fresh seed. They don't like to be too hot, and they don't like to be too super cold either. I think having super hot, warm soil has been a problem in the past. I'm just guessing because I can't do a double blind on this. I don't have the patience for it. But I will say that the nasturtium seeds that I put into areas that were too warm, like in with pepper seeds and other things, where I was keeping the seeds warm, the nasturtiums didn't germinate as well. So they don't need to be. The soil doesn't need to be super warm. And you don't want it to be super cold either. But I would say if your soil temperatures are in the 60s, it's going to be fine. And I would start them in containers this time of year in soil, just regular room temperature, not too hot. If you've got a window, if you keep your house super ridiculously hot, like above 70 degrees, put them next to a window so that they're not, so they don't get quite so hot, and keep them moist, and they'll germinate. I would say the germination percentage on nasturtiums is not high. So I usually plant two or three seeds per pot, and you get one nasturtium out of that, and you got a lot of nasturtiums. I like the climbing nasturtiums best. I don't like the little super compact little things that everybody wants something super compact. I like the ones that climb all over things. I like them on the trellises. They're beautiful. They're great. And they keep producing. They're much tougher plants. And there are a bunch of climbers out there. There's a group called Amazon Jewels, which I've grown before, which are a variety of different climbers. Spitfire is an old climber. Moon something or another. Moonlight, I think, is one. Yeti was another climber. So there are a bunch of them out there. Peach Melba maybe was one. But try the climbers. Try the big growers. Don't grow the little compact ones because you're picking them. You want to pick them. They're really delicious that way. Varieties of corn for popcorn, and you know, there's a bunch of them out there. They make a difference, and there are some great varieties of popcorn. out there. Strawberry was one of the old varieties that I think people used to grow a lot. It's a really pretty little popcorn. Not enormously productive, but not a nice one to grow. There was one I looked at the other day that I thought, you know, if I had all the space in the world, I would try to grow that one. Looked pretty good. I'll try to find the name of it during the break and tell you about it. So, yeah, there's a bunch of good popcorn varieties out there as well that it's worth doing. I love popcorn. I eat it a lot. Good popcorn. Hard to come by. Hard to pass up.
Well, I can't hunt and I can't fish, but I can drive you crazy, yes I can. Well, I can't even make a dish, but I can drive you crazy, yes I can.
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 1065.
I got to find those Taichung peas. Got about time to plant them. Jim in Georgetown, Jim, you didn't mention it, but we talked a couple of weeks ago before I got credit out. About Jim sent me a picture of broom sage, and he saw it coming up in his yard in the Kogon. And Kogon's a terrible grass that is really we've made life very difficult for ourselves. Our worst problems are always the ones we bring on ourselves. Seems like. Well, sometimes let's go there for a second. And so Kogon has become very difficult to manage. It's a grass we imported. We did everything we could to get it to spread. It's weird. Not only did we import the seed that was a little dangerous and would have spread, then we probably somebody realized, oh, well, this is really easy to start. Let's start sowing it everywhere for cows. Well, the cows wouldn't eat it, and it kept producing seed. And then it was all on the roadsides, and we started mowing the roadsides and spreading it by mowing with the mowers, and then we dug out the ditches and moved it all around. We moved it everywhere, and it has become an absolute nightmare. It's a nightmare. One of its weaknesses is that it needs a lot of sunlight. And it's not easy to take advantage of that weakness, but it's not impossible, and you can think about it, and we can work on it. Another one of its advantages is that it takes up phosphorus really well, which better than most plants do. So it tends to outcompete a lot of plants around it, according to some research that I've read. I've also read that one of the plants that seems to hold its own, won't eliminate it, but it seems to hold its own when Kogon is around, is good old broom sage, and that's because broom sage itself is pretty good at holding on to phosphorus. And so it steals from Kogon one of the advantages that Kogon grass has. It's a terrible, weird grass, Kogon. But Jim had the broom sage mixed in with it, and here's what I think will happen. The broom sage stands a little taller, and if you let it stand taller, it will tend to shade out a lot of that Kogon. Is there a perfect, and I would say you can help it along. You can help it along by using a herbicide like glyphosate and spraying each crown of the Kogon around the broom sage. And I would do that particularly, I think, probably in April or May, Jim, and you'll begin to see the broom sage beginning to spread, and you'll give the broom sage a little bit of advantage, and it can take over that space. Any gaps you create where there isn't Kogon is going to be invaded, thankfully, by the seeds of the broom sage. It will just spread to those areas very rapidly, and that's a really nice thing. It's a really nice thing to have. So there you go. Something to think about. I think that broom sage will spread, and it is the seeds. I don't know why broom sage is broom sage is weedy. I guess I gotta just say it. It is weedy, and thank goodness, because it saves us from the worst abuses we do to the landscape. And one of the nice things about it is that it can disappear after a while too, if you don't manage it right. And or if you maybe you manage it the way you want to, and over time the broom sage disappears and you get another grass in there or other wildflowers that you prefer. So it sort of withdraws politely from the stage when you don't need it. Great plant, broom sage. Glad you got it, Jim. Mowing is one of the things with mowing broom sage, because you're probably not going to burn it. Maybe you'll burn it. With the Kogon, it could be a little tricky. So we're we need to mow once a year, and I would say let's do it in April. And both of them are going to come back from that pretty well. It may be that with time we'll find a perfect time when it's good to mow the broom sage, so that it gets an advantage over the Kogon. I'm not smart enough to know what that time is right now. I don't think we've experimented enough, and they're probably both going to do it at about the same time. One thing I might try, and this is also another thing to try, Jim, if the Kogon starts to want to go to seed a little bit earlier, then mow that whole area in July and see if the broom sage doesn't come back more strongly, and it will seed in later. Once the grass starts putting its energy into seeds, it's taking it out of the roots, and that's a good thing. So you'll experiment, but I would say generally start with April. So there we go. Let's see. As jute. So end of last summer, I had an area of my yard infested with a plant my app identified as jute. How does this plant spread, and how do I get rid of it without killing the grass? You know, I don't know about your app. I think apps aren't, we make a lot of AI, and AI is going to be like, it's going to be like McDonald's is to the world of good food. How is that? You're going to get something, but it ain't necessarily the real thing. A lot of those plant apps are not very accurate. I am unaware of jute being a weed that would take over anything. But we can talk about it. Was this a grass? Was it a plant? Did it have grass-like leaves, or did it have leaves that I'm guessing it did, or maybe leaves that look like, you're going to have to help me. Tell me what this thing looked like, because it wasn't jute. I'm reasonably sure. I'm not always right, too. But I don't know of jute being a problem in lawns. So I think we got to find another thing. Give me a little more help. A picture of it would be great. Or even a description. Give it a shot. Tell me, what did you see? And it doesn't have to be super accurate. Doesn't have to be super accurate. Let's see what else we got going here. Let's see. There we go. And, have I answered everybody's questions? I think so. And so one of the things I will start talking about, and we'll pick it up, because I keep thinking about all these things I want to plant this year and new ways of doing it. I have told you in the past that on the Gulf Coast, I thought it was very difficult to grow asparagus, and it is. And there are two problems with growing asparagus on the Gulf Coast. One is that it doesn't want to go dormant. And if it doesn't want to go dormant, it isn't going to produce nice stalks. So you've got to figure out how to make it go dormant. And I'm increasingly thinking there are probably ways of doing that. We'll talk about it. But there's another trick, and that is that when it comes up, even if it comes up with a stalk that's a reasonably good size stalk, reasonably thick, the head, the flowering part of it, may open. And once that happens, it's not good to eat anymore. And it becomes really difficult to eat it. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? Well, I've been growing several varieties. I mean, UK-157 was one, UK something else. I mean, UC, I'm sorry, UC-157, UC, there's another one, 72 or something like that. And then there's some couple of new ones that I think are particularly good to try. And one is called Atlas, and the heads don't seem to open as readily. In the heat, it's more heat tolerant. So it's a good one to try. And I'll tell you something else about asparagus that I've found, for those of you who are interested. You don't need to go buy plants. You can grow that out from seed, and it's not a bad way to do it. It takes a little bit extra patience, but not much. And now is a good time to go ahead and get those seeds started. Get your seeds started. They may actually even go dormant in midsummer, which is okay. And then you can get them going back in fall, and you might actually get, it's almost as if you had a couple of years of growth in those guys. But get those seeds started now for the asparagus. Apollo is a great one. Atlas is a good one. Apollo is probably pretty good too. I think it's going to also, it's more heat tolerant. It's probably going to go, it's going to retain its dormancy a little better. Do not try... I would be very careful about trying the asparagus that are designed for northern winters. I'm not sure, like Erasmus and some of the others, I'm not sure they're going to do quite as well, because they're going to want to flower out, spray out in spring. So just a couple of things. I'm playing with asparagus. I've been very pleased with how they've worked so far. We should have an abundance of asparagus this year, and I've got about 7 varieties out there. The old varieties like Martha Washington, not so good. Not so good, I think, for South Alabama. You might get enough cold for them to be a little more consistent and a cooler spring in North Alabama, but springs are getting generally warmer, not to say we don't have these exceptional cold days that are getting worse and worse, but generally warmer, so we got to think about that when we're growing asparagus.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. So let's try to identify this plant real quickly from, is it Terry? dark stems with oval leaves, maybe more wide teardrop. Huh. I'm just not sure. Did you see little... You're going to have to send me a picture of that, Terry. I think it wasn't jute. I'm trying to think if some of the common weeds may come across to a not very smart app as resembling jute. And I'm going through my head if maybe poor Joe, Diodia, buttonweed would resemble jute. Was this kind of a trailing thing that moved along the ground, Terry? I'm not sure. But I think we're probably going to need a picture of it. We'll figure it out. And what can I say about these plant apps? Paul in Sonoma. Paul, I'm surprised you're calling from Sonoma. Tell me what's going on. You had a question about gypsy moths or some comments on gypsy moths, which we now call spongy moths.
Once upon a time, we had gypsy moth that was attacking the hardwood forests of the Northeast. And so they developed this amazing pesticide that they sprayed on the gypsy moth, and they got rid of it. And it was like a miracle. But the problem was they sprayed it on fruit trees, and kids started eating fruit. And this was 1892. And we got the first cases of polio from the kids eating that pesticide, which was made from lead arsenic. And so then the first...
Okay, so Paul, let me say this. One, we didn't get rid of the gypsy moth. Two, arsenic has nothing to do with polio. Three, thank you for calling. It's interesting. Gypsy moths are not a problem in Alabama. Spongy moths is what we call them now. They never have been a huge problem in Alabama. They remain a problem in hardwood forests in the north. Arsenic is something that we used a lot on crops, and it still is showing up. We used arsenic on cotton quite a bit. It's called Paris Green, and it's worth thinking about some of the damage that's done. And the thing about arsenic is not that it causes polio. Lord have mercy. Polio is a virus. It never goes away. It's a problem. And so our rice is now contaminated with arsenic. And one of the things that arsenic does, if you remember, there was an old play called Arsenic and Old Lace. Arsenic was a famous poison that actually was used to kill people on purpose. It is quite toxic to humans. And really has an effect, and it's a problem that we used it at one time. But I don't think we need to talk about gypsy moths and arsenic right now. We'll talk about that later. Listen, what we want to talk about is the fact that it is time to plant. So let's think about all the things that need to be planted right now. Your tomatoes, you got to order your tomatoes. You definitely want to put your, and you're going to start those in pots. You're going to start them in pots and inside, but this is the time to do it because you got to get those tomatoes up and growing. You got to plant your sugar snaps. You don't plant your sugar snaps in spring. You're not going to get any sugar snaps because they can't take the heat. So you want to plant them right now. That's right. If you're on the Gulf Coast, you want to plant them right now. If you're farther north around Huntsville, you probably want to plant those sugar snaps so closer to Valentine's Day. That's my goal. You could plant them a little earlier. You could plant them a little later, but not too much later. And so I'm actually scrambling around right now thinking, gosh, where did I put those sugar snap seeds? I know I had them. they were here. I'm going to go find them. It's time to do that. It's time to plant nasturtiums. Really great time to plant nasturtiums. It's time, if you're going to plant your broccoli, your kale, your collards, this is it. This is the last chance you're really going to have to get those in and get them going before the cold weather. Wouldn't hurt before the warm weather, excuse me. And it's not, it may be a little cold outside to put them outside, but you could probably do it outside. You could probably start a lot of things outside right now, and this, it's probably warm enough, particularly if you're on the Gulf Coast, but you can start them in pots and then put them out. It's time for planting carrots outside. I would plant beets over most of Alabama. You could even try the beets on the Gulf Coast. Beets are something that you're a little aspirational sometimes, particularly on the Gulf Coast in those sandy soils. They tend to have a harder time. But it's, I would even try your beets now. It's time for planting a lot of flowers as well. The days are getting longer, quicker. The timber doodles. The timber doodles are out, and they're making that beautiful, beautiful sound. The woodcocks, they're beep, beep, beep all over the place. You'll hear that. I can't even do it. I can't make a sound like they make. It's so amazing. But you're going to hear it all through the fields now. It's the signal that the time is right. The time is right to get things planted. It's the first bird of the new year. It signals a new year for gardening. The woodcocks are out. I guarantee you find the right places. They're out there. It's time to get out with them. Yeah, that's the theme today. You'll be back with me next week, and we'll talk more about some other things to plant and other things to work on. But if you have not ordered your seed already, it's time to do so. It's time to get out and order seed for the new year and get to planting. See you next week.